Journalist Judith Miller and Matt Cooper just explained why they're risking imprisonment rather than revealing the names of confidential sources to a federal grand jury. The grand jury is investigating who leaked that Valerie Plame was an undercover officer for the CIA. My guest Steve Chapman writes a syndicated column for the Chicago Tribune and is a member of the paper's editorial board. He thinks Miller and Cooper should reveal their sources to the grand jury. Steve Chapman, as you have pointed out in one of your op-ed pieces, the news media have sided strongly with reporters Judith Miller and Matthew Cooper, but you say that this is a battle the press can't win and doesn't deserve to win. Why not?
Well, I think journalists are citizens first, and one of the prime obligations of citizenship is to cooperate with law enforcement. When an ordinary person is witness to a crime, he or she is liable to be called to testify before a grand jury about it, and most people accept that obligation as a matter of routine. And I don't think really journalists are any different from anybody else in this situation. And I think when you have a case like this where two journalists apparently were witnesses to a federal crime, a very serious felony, they have the same duty as anybody else.
Now, Floyd Abrams, who is the lawyer for Cooper and Miller, says that the law is actually unspecific about what constitutes a covert agent, and he's not even sure if Valerie Plame meets the test and whether she'd be covered by the law, and he's not being given enough information to help him understand that.
Well, two things I would say about that. The first is he had a chance to raise those points in court. Two federal courts, a district court and an appeals court, have found that there's sufficient evidence that a crime was committed to proceed with the grand jury investigation. I think that's why we have courts, to make decisions like that. If you have a disagreement between lawyers about whether a crime has been committed, then you turn it over to the judge and the judge makes a decision. Two different courts have ruled against Mr. Abrams. He's a legendary First Amendment lawyer. I have great respect for him, but in this case, he's lost that argument. The other point I would make is that Patrick Fitzgerald is a very highly regarded career prosecutor who was brought in as a special counsel in this investigation after the Attorney General John Ashcroft disqualified himself. And one thing prosecutors have a lot of experience at is looking at cases, deciding there's not enough evidence that a crime was committed, deciding there's not enough evidence to convict somebody of a crime, and walking away from the case. Patrick Fitzgerald doesn't need the publicity. He's gotten plenty out here. He's not a cowboy. He's not a grandstander. And I don't think he would be pressing forward with this case if he weren't very convinced that a crime has been committed.
Now, Floyd Abrams says that this is really not a black and white issue, that in the 1972 Supreme Court case that is being used as the precedent for the Federal Appeals Court decision, that Justice Lewis Powell wrote in an agreement with the majority that actually there was a balancing test that should be required in situations of confidentiality, and the courts should engage in a case-by-case call, balancing how much the government needs the information versus how much the cause of journalism would be harmed by revealing confidential sources. So, you know, he's saying, look, this is not black and white.
Well, again, two courts have found that the Supreme Court decision on this is dispositive, that there's basically no First Amendment privilege for reporters to refuse to testify in a grand jury investigation. The Powell opinion in that case, that concurrence, doesn't give them much room to argue that there's a balancing test. About all Justice Powell said was that a grand jury has to be acting in good faith, and if it's not, then you can't force a journalist to testify. Nobody's alleged that this grand jury is not acting in good faith. The other point I want to make about that is if you look at the district court decision and the appeals court decision, both of them engaged basically in a balancing test. They found that this was direct evidence of a crime, of guilt or innocence, that it was a very narrow inquiry by the prosecutor, and that there was no other way to get this information. if you look at the sort of conditions that are set up in most state shield laws to try and limit the exposure of journalists to these kind of subpoenas, those conditions have already been met.
Even if Miller and Cooper were witnesses to a crime, and they're not saying that they were, what kind of precedent would this set if they were sent to prison for not revealing their sources? You know, they're saying you don't know what information is going to be leaked to you when you're a journalist. Are you concerned that in some cases a whistleblower would be breaking the law for the larger good, revealing a secret document that the revealed wrongdoing that the public should know about, but there'd be a law against revealing this secret document, for example?
Well, of course, a lot of leaks are illegal, and they're not prosecuted, and they shouldn't be prosecuted because they do serve a public good. And a lot of the state laws have a condition in them that says, you know, even if this was against the law, and even if the journalist knows who committed the crime, we're not going to make the journalist testify because the disclosure itself served the public interest. And I would like to see a federal shield law that would incorporate a standard like that. Unfortunately, we don't have one, and unfortunately, even if we had one, I don't think Miller and Cooper would qualify under this because the leak itself was really of no public value. It was just a matter of political retribution from all we can tell.
Could you argue that Miller and Cooper did their job quite well? Well, Miller's not even saying what information, if any, she got. But Cooper is saying that Time magazine was leaked information. But neither Cooper nor Miller published that information. So, you know, they're being prosecuted for information they didn't even publish.
Well, Time magazine actually did publish it, a reference to the fact that sources in the administration were trying to get Valerie Plame's name out. This was after
but
the Novak column.
That was after the Novak column,
right.
So they didn't break anything.
No, they didn't break the story. But, you know, Patrick Fitzgerald is not going after them because they wrote about it. He's going after them because they were witnesses to a crime, basically, because the disclosure is the crime, not printing the name. Robert Novak's not being prosecuted because he didn't commit any crime. It's not a crime to print Valerie Plame's name. It's only a crime for a federal employee to leak that name.
What do you make of Robert Novak's silence on this issue? A lot of people are assuming this. If he hasn't cooperated with the grand jury, then how come he isn't being threatened with prison? And if he has cooperated with the grand jury, then doesn't the grand jury have the information it needs about who's behind the leak, and why do they need it from Miller and Cooper?
Well, as you know, grand jury proceedings are secret. Prosecutors don't talk about them. People who are called before them are free to talk about them if they want. Novak has refused to comment on whether he's been subpoenaed and on whether he's testified. From that, my assumption is that he has been subpoenaed and he has testified. Under what terms, I don't know. The reason that might not settle the case and let Miller make Miller and Cooper kind of unnecessary for this investigation, I mean, there could be a few explanations. One is that you don't want to go to court with only one person's word against another. So if Novak says so-and-so leaked it to me and so-and-so says no, I didn't, it would be very helpful, probably critical to a prosecution, to have another witness who can say, well, actually that source leaked it to me as well. That would greatly strengthen the case. The other possible explanation is that Novak's sources may not be the same as Miller and Cooper's sources. You could have had several people in the administration who were peddling this information, trying to get it out, and some of them called Novak, some of them called Miller, some of them called Cooper. They may not all be the same one.
Novak witnessed a crime, if a crime was committed, when the source handed over the information about Valerie Plame. Novak printed that information, which revealed the undercover identity of Valerie Plame. So, you know, wouldn't he be at least complicit in that crime?
Well, it's not a crime to print the name. If it were, then a lot of leaks that involve classified information would be crimes on the part of newspapers and broadcast outlets. I guess if Novak was a witness to a crime and he gave the evidence to a grand jury, he's discharged his legal obligation. The fact that he printed it may be grounds for journalists to hold him in contempt, but it's not grounds for a grand jury to hold him in contempt or a court to hold him in contempt.
My guest is Steve Chapman. He's a syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune. He's been responding to journalists Judith Miller and Matt Cooper, who explained earlier why they're risking imprisonment rather than revealing confidential sources to a federal grand jury. Now, in a separate investigation, Judith Miller has been asked to hand over her phone records, asked by the U.S. prosecutor in Chicago, Patrick Fitzgerald, who's also the special prosecutor in the Valerie Plame leak. Now, Miller says that the records they're asking for are basically all of her phone records in the period after September 11th, a period in which she called basically every source that she has. So she would be handing over the names and numbers of all of her sources if she complied with this, and she is therefore not complying. Do you have an opinion on that one?
Well, that is a separate dispute, and that does obviously give me some reservations. And I think that's why it would be a good thing to have a federal shield law to make sure that prosecutorial inquiries are kept as narrow and limited as possible to avoid sort of sweeping investigations of you know, every source a reporter might have.
Why do you think there should be a federal shield law for journalists, and what do you think it ought to say?
Look, there are a lot of cases where the simplest thing for a prosecutor is you see a story in the newspaper about a crime that's been committed or a leak that you know is illegal, and the prosecutor could just decide, well, you know, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, and let me just subpoena the journalist and find out who the source was. There may be a lot of other ways to find that information, and I think journalists ought to be sort of the last resort for prosecutors, not the first resort. That's what a shield law would do. It would require prosecutors to meet certain pretty strict conditions before they can subpoena a reporter. And only if those conditions are met would a reporter be forced to disclose a source. You know, the reporters in this case, you know, they're outstanding reporters, and I have a lot of respect for them, and I admire their fortitude, even though I think they're mistaken. But they do have a point when they say, and the President General has a point when it says, if this becomes commonplace, it is going to dry up the flow of information that the public needs. And I think a federal shield law would prevent that from happening. It would limit it to cases where it's really essential for law enforcement.
The special prosecutor has asked some sources to sign confidentiality waivers that would relieve journalists from the promise of confidentiality that they gave to the source. Do you have any concerns about this growing use of confidentiality waivers?
Well, what a journalist should do is tell a source, I will do everything I can to keep your identity secret, but if I'm faced with a legal court order to testify, I'm going to follow the law. You know, it's a promise to a source is a little like a marriage vow. You know, a lot of people walk up the aisle every year and vow not to separate till death do us part. But a lot of people eventually decide that the evil of honoring that promise is greater than the evil of breaking it. And I think in a situation like this where you have somebody who's committed a potential felony, and the journalist in this case had no reason to expect that they would have to go to jail to protect that source, they shouldn't go to jail to protect that source.
But I think the point journalists are trying to make now is that when you promise confidentiality, that's a sacred promise. You don't then go home and decide, well, should I keep that promise or not? Because the whistleblower is often risking their career or risking their life to reveal that information. So if they're revealing that information to a journalist who's, you know, willing to divorce them, then it means the journalist can't be trusted with the information.
A journalist should not be trusted to break the law and defy court orders to protect a source, in my opinion.
Well, Steve Chapman, thank you very much for talking with us.
You bet.
Steve Chapman writes a syndicated column for the Chicago Tribune. Earlier, we heard from journalists Matt Cooper and Judith Miller and their lawyer, Floyd Abrams.